I'm Matthew Petty in for Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Barack Obama made history when he mentioned gay rights in his inaugural address, a first for a US president. We'll hear reaction from new state representative Joe Saunders, one of two openly gay legislators elected in 2012, and the first in Florida history. But first, ethics reform in Tallahassee. Less than a year ago, a government watchdog group warned that Florida faced a corruption crisis. Now lawmakers are moving ahead with ethics reform that's billed as the most comprehensive in 36 years. 90.7's Mark Simpson has that conversation ahead on Intersection.
The State Senate Ethics and Elections Committee is fast-tracking comprehensive ethics reform. The committee's chairman, Republican Senator Jack LaValla, says it's the most comprehensive ethics reform from the legislature in 36 years, and the measure is receiving praise outside of legislative circles as well. For more on this bill and other developments from WFSU in Tallahassee, I'm joined by Dan Krasner. He's executive director of the government watchdog group Integrity Florida. Dan, nice to be speaking with you again.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Also joining us from Tallahassee by phone is Bill Cotterell, longtime Tallahassee journalist and legislative watcher now at the Florida Current. Bill, good to speak with you as well.
Good afternoon.
So this bill extends a ban on lawmakers lobbying legislators up to 2 years after leaving office. It requires lawmakers to abstain from votes benefiting themselves or their families. Also authorizes the Florida Commission on Ethics to go after public office holders who refuse to file disclosures or pay fines. Dan Krasner, how does this proposal compare with current standards?
This proposal is really moving Florida in a much better direction for ethics enforcement. Florida received a failing grade for ethics enforcement on a national report card put together at stateintegrity.org by Global Integrity, Center for Public Integrity, and Public Radio International. So enforcing the ethics laws on the books is critical. So the idea of having more referrals of investigations to the Ethics Commission, more tougher fine enforcement, these are very positive steps for the people of Florida.
Dan Krasner, you alluded to just less than a year ago, you were on this program talking about Integrity Florida's report that ranked the state among the nation's worst in the total number of federal public corruption convictions between 2000 and 2010, and you described the state as facing a corruption crisis. Now we're hearing what sounds like an about-face in policies and your support of this measure. Is this bill really that comprehensive, and are you surprised that things are changing so rapidly?
This bill is the most comprehensive ethics reform proposal that the people of Florida have seen in 36 years, and it's a tribute to the new leadership that have taken over the Florida legislature since we last spoke. The Senate President, Don Gates, has made ethics reform a priority issue for his administration. The new House Speaker, Will Weatherford, has made commitments to ethics reform. So the people of Florida have spoken. During the election season, ethics reform came up in a number of campaigns as a major issue. So there's genuine interest in wanting to improve Florida's reputation, get away from that number one ranking for corruption with the federal public corruption convictions. So those are the criminal, federal cases, and to get to tougher law enforcement of our state and local laws.
Bill Cotterell, you've certainly been around the Capitol a number of years. Is this the most comprehensive thing you've seen in terms of ethics reform in 36 years?
Well, yes, I perhaps regret to say I was here 36 years ago. But yes, I do think, and what Dan mentioned, the high priority that the leadership is putting on it, nothing is ever going to happen unless the governor and the legislative leaders. We all know that, all members are putatively created equal, but some are a little more equal than others. And the fact that they're serious about it and that guys like Don Gates are making this a very high priority, that speaks volumes. And I think it's also, aside from the, not to doubt in any way, the sincerity of the legislators involved, it did come from public reaction. What we saw last few years in Broward County, there was a scathing grand jury report, I think, down there, just as Governor Crist was leaving office. There have been not so many within the legislature. I don't recall in recent years a whole lot of corruption convictions, but certainly at the county and city levels around the state, they're sensitive, these members, to how it looks. And if the average Floridian perceives the government to be unethical, then it just lowers respect for government at all levels.
Well, Bill Cotterell, take us inside a little bit. How do you think this new leadership regime in Tallahassee in the legislative chambers compares to the folks who just left? And our listeners locally will remember that Dean Cannon, Winter Park lawmaker, was just Speaker of the House not that long ago.
Yeah, and of course he formed his own lobbying firm, which he's abiding by the rules, of course. He will not personally lobby himself for the required period of time. However, among his partners is his immediate predecessor as Speaker, Larry Creedle, who came over from the Florida Chamber of Commerce to the Cannon Law Firm. Here again, it should be emphasized, there's nothing illegal about this. But certainly Mr. Creedle, his time is up for sitting it out. He can lobby. And the definition of lobbying, or what exactly constitutes lobbying activities, is sort of in the eye of the beholder. If a member, I don't want to single out Dean Cannon, but say if he goes to dinner with a client or with some legislators and recalls old times, has a drink with some friends from the legislature, people that he served with just 18 months ago, how can you say, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to register as a lobbyist for that client, but how can you say we're playing golf together and lobbying coincide? It's a judgment call that way. So influence is a commodity in Tallahassee, and it's always going to be used and sold. And the best we can hope for is that it's publicly reported and recorded, and that here again, that members, to a certain extent, have to have a certain backbone and resistance just because they're talking with a former speaker, with a former Senate president, or people that have in the past sent their bills to committee or have controlled their political fundraising through the party. They've still got to be able to say, well, you know, that's not a good bill. I don't think I want to do that. If we have men and women of integrity that can do that, a lobbyist's past affiliation with the legislature won't be so decisive, I would think.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about government ethics reform. I'm joined by Dan Krasner. He's Executive Director of Integrity Florida. Also joining us by phone, Bill Cotterell, longtime Tallahassee journalist, now at the Florida Current. I'm Mark Simpson. What ethics reforms do you think state lawmakers should be considering? Tell us about it online, Facebook or Twitter, or send email to intersection@WMFE.org. Dan Krasner, are there shortcomings for this bill?
Well, you always want to see more, but this is a tremendous piece of legislation moving forward. There are a few additional concepts that could be considered. In fact, Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs sent a well-written letter to the Florida Commission on Ethics pointing to some additional loopholes in our state ethics law. For your listeners, the state legislature sets the bar. The ethics code, you know, rules that state and local government officials have to follow. But some local communities, like Orange County, have gone further, and they're allowed to go further with tougher local laws. We actually worked on Integrity Florida, put together a research report in partnership with the Leroy Collins Institute at Florida State that inventoried all those local ethics policies. And Orange County stood out at seeking to have more detailed financial disclosure of officials' private financial interests to ensure they're not increasing what's in their pocket based on their public positions. They've also looked at voting conflicts, ensuring that, you know, the conflict, while it might not be there the day of the vote, Orange County wants to make sure a conflict doesn't exist from a couple years ago or going a couple years forward. So Orange County has been a great laboratory of ethics reform policy that, you know, hopefully the leaders of those local policies will bring their ideas to Tallahassee for consideration. There is a window of opportunity here to raise the ethical bar for state and local government in Florida. So Integrity Florida would encourage ethics reformers from around the state at the local level to come to Tallahassee and bring your ideas.
And I just saw that Representative Mike Cleland of Lake Mary, Democrat, has filed his own bill as we speak here, House Bill 381, that would allow for more public involvement in filing valid complaints and expanding the scope of the Commission on Ethics, trying to get more financial transparency. So would you say ethics reform definitely on the tip of lawmakers' tongues up there this upcoming session?
It certainly is. And Representative Cleland did take into account the innovation in Orange County and captured a lot of those improvements in his piece of legislation. Representative Charles McBurney from the Jacksonville area has a great bill narrowly focused on fine enforcement. Representative, former state senator, now Representative Mike Fasano from the Tampa Bay area has a broad-based ethics reform proposal. And Senator Jeff Clemens as well. There are so many ethics bills emerging, and how great is that for the people of Florida that we're actually seeing a prioritization of this issue and good debate. To just give you a quick snapshot of the motivation, potential motivation of Senate President Don Gates, he said in his opening remarks when he was sworn in as the new Senate president, he said, "In my medium-sized North Florida county, a county commissioner was removed for official misconduct. The tourism development director committed suicide after he stole bed tax and BP money. The Speaker of the House was forced to resign. The tax collector was run out of office. A college president was fired, and the sheriff is now in federal prison." And that's just his county of Okaloosa County, a medium-sized Florida county. We've just seen at the local level across Florida too many cases like that, too many stories in our own backyard. And you know, lawmakers and the people of Florida have had enough, and it's fantastic that the conversation in Tallahassee is narrowing in on zeroing in on ethics reform and how to prevent or at least reduce the risk of corruption in our state.
Bill Cotterell, you said it might be tough to characterize the mood up there. Do you think it are things really that rosy, and do you see any shortcomings or obstacles as this makes its way through the session that starts in March?
I wouldn't say rosy exactly. Nothing ever is perfect. As Dan said, there's always room for more improvement. I do think, first of all, the people carrying these bills. Dan mentioned Jack Latvala, Representative Mike Fasano. These are men who are both, say, the second act of their political careers. Jack Latvala was in for a while for the Senate, left, came back, was reelected, and started a new eight-year eligibility. Mike Fasano also had been in the House, went to the Senate, back to the House. These are experienced, knowledgeable men who know what can be done, know how to do it, how to use the legislative process. And I think, particularly in Latvala's case, he's a campaign consultant by trade. So that helps. These are, meaning no disrespect to the newcomers who come in with trying to copy the Orlando, the Orange County model, meaning no disrespect to some new ideas and new thinking. These are experienced legislators who know where the bodies are buried. As Governor Lawton Childs used to say, that if you want a good game warden, you should hire a reformed poacher, with emphasis on the word reformed. However, not to say that these guys are reformed poachers by any means, but still, they're not dewy-eyed ingenues who think that this up here is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, a Frank Capra movie. I think they know what the problems are and what is doable within the boundaries of the First Amendment and the Citizens United ruling in the case of campaign finance. But I think it's a great step forward, as Dan said, for instance, to prohibit voting on things where you have a conflict rather than just filing a statement noting the conflict for the record. I think in the Senate you had something like 15 days to file such a statement. It's better. And here again, it's a judgment call. These members are what the British would call men of affairs. They are involved in a lot of businesses, and they're not small time in their thinking. So they would have conflicts that you and I might not have in our normal course of business or being an employee of a company. But they know when there's a conflict. And when they, if they suspect, if it's a close call, then don't vote on a particular bill. Don't use, and not only don't vote on it, don't use your influence to try to advance the bill if, for instance, it would benefit directly your wife's employer or your family business back home. That spirit, where Dan said the public's getting sick of it, the knowledge, that that's perhaps the new attitude. If you can't call it rosy, at least I do think it's a big improvement over the sort of back-scratching clubhouse atmosphere we've seen in the past.
Well, I love your Jimmy Stewart references there to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Let me ask you about another story a little closer to home. How about Mr. Scott Goes to Tallahassee? What do we expect out of the governor's office? Is he going to be behind this, do you think?
I would think so. He hasn't. Certainly, he could have killed it in its crib if he wanted to. He could have quietly met with the leadership and said, look, let's not do this, if he had strong objections. I would think that he would be supportive here. Certainly, he's in his own reelection cycle now. He knows what his own poll numbers look like, and being on the side of the Angels is never a bad thing for any candidate 18 months out from a campaign.
For people that might just be listening in, Dan Krasner, what do you think in terms of the real everyday lives of Floridians? Where are they going to see the impact of this bill as they live their lives in this state?
Well, let's hope that there's some cost savings here, and that more jobs come to Florida and more capital investment come as a result of ethics reform. And let me explain that. Forbes magazine is talking about political corruption in Florida as a problem. So if you're an investor and you're considering where to put your business and you read that in Forbes, that's going to turn you away from the state of Florida. But when you read going forward, and let's hope this legislation moves forward and is passed, if you see that Florida is passing ethics reform, is raising the ethical bars, becoming a more open place of with government at least, that's going to send an encouraging sign to the marketplace that this is a safer, less risky place to invest your capital and jobs. And let's hope the people of Florida see jobs as a result of these stronger ethics measures. And let's hope we see cost savings. You know, when we see that all the spending gets online and the vendor contracts and there's more sunlight on where the public's money is going and less conflicts that we know have been there in the past, let's hope there's some cost savings for the taxpayers as well.
We've been speaking with Bill Cotterell of the Florida Current and also with Dan Krasner. He's Executive Director of Integrity Florida, about these new ethics reforms moving through the Florida legislature. We'll be keeping an eye on this as the session unfolds. Gentlemen, both, thank you so much for your insights.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
Up next, a conversation with State Representative Joe Saunders about LGBT rights in Florida. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Joe Saunders is a Central Florida activist for the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community and a state representative whose East Orlando district includes the University of Central Florida. The Democrat is one of two openly gay legislators elected in 2012, the first in Florida history. He joins me to talk about advancing gay rights in national and local politics. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, I just want to talk about the inaugural address for a start. Barack Obama is the first U.S. president to mention gay rights in an inaugural address. And let's just hear what the president had to say.
Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well.
So Obama's remarks come at the same time as the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to consider two separate gay marriage cases in March. And of course, you would have seen that all nine justices were seated near the president as he delivered that inaugural speech. Now, Representative Saunders, I want to ask you, how is Central Florida's LGBT community responding to Obama's remarks in that address?
Well, here's what I think is really important to note about the way that President Obama included those comments in his inauguration speech. You couldn't hear it in the clip before, but he introduced the concept of movement on these issues within a broader context. He talked about it in the same breath that he talked about the importance of making sure that women receive equal pay for equal work. He invoked the important work happening within immigrant communities to make sure that when folks in the Hispanic community or immigrant communities come to the United States, that they have every shot at success. He invoked my favorite part of the speech was when he used alliteration to talk about Seneca Falls, Selma, and Stonewall, which is the mention of Stonewall, which is perceived to be sort of the beginning of the modern LGBT movement for equality, was really powerful. And, you know, in some ways, I think that President Obama is leading on that by bringing those issues into the forefront, but he's also following. I think that his election was made possible because of an incredible coalition of people who have all felt discrimination in their lives in some way, whether it's women who consistently are treated differently than men in the workplace and in other areas, Hispanic or Black Americans who have felt artificial barriers to success in their lives, or the LGBT community, which is denied opportunity in some really important ways. That coalition got him elected, so he's acknowledging it, but he's also responding to the trends in our demographics. These communities together in one coalition are really going to be the majority of voices in our country, and I think him getting in front of that is powerful, but it also shows that he sees the trends in the same way that a lot of people do, and invoking values of tolerance and opportunity and human dignity, it speaks to all of those communities in one way that I think is really important.
You went through your own election recently. There's another openly gay representative in Florida, David Richardson, a Democrat from Miami.
A very nice guy.
So do you think, I mean, is this kind of a weather vane for Florida? Do you think that the fact that there are now two openly gay representatives in the state house shows that there's some kind of change afoot in Florida?
I do. And I think what it means is that kind of people don't care. You know, David and I, we are friends. We've gotten to know each other since we started our work in the legislature. And we both have very different stories and very different backgrounds. But I think the one through line that we both have in terms of our election is that we actually just didn't talk about these issues that much, because when, at least my experience, I can't speak for him, my experience is that it just didn't matter to people. It wasn't necessarily the most important thing when it came up, but it also wasn't something that was going to hold me back or stop people from being able to take me seriously as a candidate. I think that, again, what was interesting about my race and my experience is that I've done work in the civil rights community for a long time. I've helped to pass laws here in Orange County that protect the Hispanic, Black, and gay community from discrimination. And so that was just one more way for me to underscore to my constituents, who I now get to serve, that I'm ready to fight for them, because I've been fighting to end inequality for most of my career, and I'll do it every single day in the legislature.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE. I'm talking with State Representative Joe Saunders. I'm Matthew Petty. Where do you think the issue of gay rights is headed in national and local politics? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at intersection@wmfe.org. Representative Saunders, I want to ask you, drilling down to the local level a bit, I mean, a year ago, Central Florida leaders agreed to expand Orlando's domestic partner registry to include the whole county. And, you know, this registry gives unmarried couples rights such as the right to visit each other in hospital, make medical decisions for each other in the event of a crisis. So pretty big decisions that, you know, if you're a heterosexual married couple, that those kind of things, you wouldn't even be worried about that. But how big a deal is this? I mean, is that something that, having experience working at the kind of grassroots local level, you feel that you can carry some of that experience through to your work in the legislature?
I actually played a leadership role in working directly with Mayor Jacobs and the Orange County Commission to create that law. I also helped to create our human rights ordinance here locally, which back in 2010 expanded non-discrimination protections for Hispanic, Black, and gay residents of the county, countywide. And it's important to note that this was a bipartisan coalition that got that done. I think the state needs to hear that message very clearly. Mayor Jacobs is a Republican. The majority of the county commission are Republicans, and they understood that it was time to create these policies. I do think that work and the messages and the arguments around why that was so necessary here do have a place in our statewide conversations about this. And maybe the most important message, I think one of the things that move people through this process the best, was the understanding that this is about our economics. If we can't create a state or a county or a city, depending on what level you're talking about, that people actually want to come to, that they feel like once they come here, they will be treated with dignity, that their family will be safe, that they'll have every opportunity that anybody else has, we can't recruit them here. And that recruitment of talent, really talented people, the retainment of really really talented people who are already here, is a critical measure in how we talk about economic development and measure economic activity. If we can't make sure that people want to come here, we don't get their tax dollars, we don't get their business, and we don't get the jobs that they inevitably create.
Do you think it's going to be difficult, though, making that transition from working at that county and city level to working with the legislature, which, I mean, it's Republican-dominated. It's going to be quite hard for Democrats to get things through that legislature. How much of a change is that going to be?
legislative activity, what do they call it? It's like sausage making, right? And I know it can be a frustrating process at times. But I have spent my entire career working to improve people's lives, and I've have a knack for going into spaces that sometimes people would have thought of as hostile and finding allies and finding friends. And, you know, partisanship isn't going to be a filter for me when I start telling a story about our economic development and job creation and basic fairness in the state. All of those things to me are very connected, and I think those are languages that that Republicans speak very well. And I also think that most people think that some of these protections have existed forever in the state. And so there's just a little bit of an educational curve. There's a little bit of a political curve at times to move through. But I expect that every person who's been elected to represent their constituents in the state is there because they want to authentically improve people's lives. Some of the ideas I'll bring forward will do that, and I expect I'll find support.
Let me just ask you finally, Representative Saunders, what are your next steps going forward on the issue of LGBT rights?
That's a good question. I think that part of it is just staying committed to some of the work that I've already talked about. I've got one bill that I think will have an impact on, again, not just the LGBT community, but on the entire economic climate in the state. We call it the Competitive Workforce Act. It would update the non-discrimination laws in the state to include the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. We got to do some work on family recognition. We have a constitutional amendment in the state, which may be addressed or not addressed by the Supreme Court decisions that could be coming soon. But I think at a minimum, we have to be ready to acknowledge that these families are out there, that my family exists. Right now, my partner and I are legally invisible, and that's not a way to create stability in our economics or acknowledge human dignity. So I think we've got to just have these conversations, and that's the first step in the legislature. Give these ideas their day in court, because I think when that happens, we're going to find an expeditious process, because they're good ideas, and I think the majority of people in the legislature will agree with what I have to say.
Is that kind of strange? I mean, talking about being legally invisible when you're in Orange County or Orlando or even Pinellas County, I'm not sure exactly whether you have to sign the document in every single jurisdiction where it's been enacted.
But you do.
Is it quite strange going from a place where you are recognized and then sort of, I don't know, 5 miles down the road you're not? What's that like?
Yeah, the experience of LGBT couples can be a little ping-pongy. In the best of times, it can be a little sort of jarring. But in the worst of times, in the moments of crisis, in the moments when these policies really matter, moments where a health crisis has happened and end-of-life decision needs to be made, a visit to a hospital, or the ability to make healthcare decisions can be the difference between life and death. It's certainly more dramatic than that. Right now, it's a patchwork. And I think that's an argument for why we need statewide laws. People shouldn't have to make decisions about which hospital they go to based on county borders that they have to memorize. You know, that shouldn't be the way that healthcare decisions have to be made. And right now, if you're a registered domestic partner in Orange County and you drive over the line to Lake County or Seminole County or Osceola County, you are completely invisible when it comes to family recognition law. So something needs to be done. And again, I think that's another really good point that should be made at this legislative level, and hopefully we'll find some momentum behind it.
I've been speaking with State Representative Joe Saunders, a Democrat from Orlando. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty, and for Mark Simpson, thanks for listening.